I am launching a limited series podcast, Christian Women and Menopause, strategies for midlife women who want to know what the Bible says about menopause symptoms like stress, lack of confidence, anxiety, and depression. Christian Women and Menopause is a limited series, so there are only 21 episodes. Episodes will drop one per day starting Tuesday, April 23rd. Check out Christian Women and Menopause on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Christian Women in Menopause, a limited series brought to you by Hello Hot Flash. Hey there, I'm Stephanie Shaw. Welcome to the Hello Hot Flash podcast, where midlife women can learn from guest experts and authors who discuss menopause and all that comes with this new chapter in our lives. Hello Hot Flash, where we learn to control the change and not let the change control us. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Hello Hot Flash, where we help you control the midlife change. I'm here with two guests today, so I'm very fortunate. April and Kim, thank you both for being here.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Of course, of course. So April Haverman is the co-founder of Medovia, providing education and support for menopause. She has over 10 years of experience in the menstrual and sexual reproductive health space and serves on the Women in Global Health Seattle Advisory Panel. Kim Hart is also a co-founder of Medovia, whose mission it is to provide support and education to women going through menopause and to help change the workforce cultures where women at midlife are supported and can thrive. Can I get a hallelujah right there?
For sure.
Yeah, right. We need that so much. I want to start this conversation by both of you telling me a little bit about your story, your background, and what got you here.
Sure, I'll dive in. Medovia first, Stephanie, I'd like to say, is a fused word. It took us a long time to come up with that name, but it's mid for midlife, O for ovary, and via is the pathway through. And we come alongside individuals and organizations through that menopause journey. Kim and I have known each other for a long time. We've been in different social circles and work circles with the work that we do, and we're both in midlife, along with our other co-founder, Emily, who's not here today. And as we were traveling and moving through that menopause journey, we just found that other women were really isolated, lonely, confused. They had lack of resources as it relates to menopause. And so we decided to do something about it. And we decided to come together with our 25 plus years of combined experience and launched Medovia about a year ago.
Amazing. And I've been doing tons of research. April, you and I have had an opportunity to speak a couple of times, and you guys have, I'll make sure that everything is in the show notes, but you have to check out their website. There's a lot of great information out there. Kim, what's your story?
Well, April's talked about how we came together, and it's probably the most exciting work that I've done in a really long time. April and Emily have different skill sets and abilities than I do, and the three of us coming together is really magic and powerful. I've worked for the last long time. I don't want to age myself, but in the high-tech industry in HR, and I've seen cultures change, and I've seen the evolution of really people talking about what they need in order to be comfortable and happy in the workplace. And I went through my own menopause journey, mostly during COVID, trying to figure out how to navigate it, and felt a calling to really try and normalize this conversation in the US and change cultures where it's acceptable. I thought when I got to this age that we would have figured it out by now. And, you know, we clearly haven't figured it out by now. And I think in honor of Women's History Month, we want, that's the legacy that we want to leave. We want to be able to have menopause be a normal topic, have people comfortable talking about it, and make the world better for our daughters. So this is super exciting time and opportunity. The U.S. lags behind the rest of, well, I shouldn't say the rest of the world, but the UK is much farther ahead on this. And we've learned a lot of lessons from them, and we're ready to bust in and change cultures in the US right now.
I love that. And you're right. We are far behind, but we're going to make a change. The conversation is becoming a lot more free, and more people are having it. I'm like, is it because that's the space that I'm in, or is everyone now talking about menopause? But I think more people are really talking about it. So hopefully we are on the right track. This question is for either one of you guys. How would you describe the unique experiences of midlife women, especially as it relates to 2024 in today's society?
I do agree with you, Stephanie, that this is new information coming out in our workforce. And the PR and press that happened in the last year from both what's been in the New York Times and notable women talking and wanting to further this conversation has really helped move this conversation forward dramatically. I mean, in the last year alone. So I think that we're at a place right now where women are living longer, are staying in the workforce longer, and they are also at the height of their careers when they're in this position to be able to want to manage menopause. Statistically, 1.1 billion postmenopausal women worldwide is estimated by next year. So it is a powerful force of people who no longer want to be able to just suck it up, right? Like our moms did, and want to be able to really live their best life. So I think those are some of the bigger differences that got us to where we are right now. April, what would you add?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think that menopause is a topic that many have been very uncomfortable talking about in the past. You know, to Kim's point, it's been this a topic that carries a lot of stigma and shame and secrecy. And I think now that menopause is really taking center stage with celebrities like Oprah, for example, more and more women are recognizing and realizing that they can speak up and it is okay to speak out. And I think as we move into 2024 and beyond, we're going to begin to see that comfort level change. And women are going to begin to start asking for accommodations and support. And if they don't get it, I think they're going to leave organizations and they're going to go seek it someplace else. So it is a very interesting year to sit back and look at all of the players and see how it's all going to unfold.
I love that. It's like we're finding our voice. With me saying that, I also don't know if we realized that we needed this voice for so long because it wasn't a conversation. You just mentioned, Kim, that our moms didn't talk to us about this because a lot of times there's shame. I was going through my mom's phone. I'm like, okay, you need to download episodes of Hello Hot Flash. I'm like, but I said the word vagina. Is that okay? She looked at me and rolled her eyes, but there's a change. There's a good change, I believe, that's happening. So in all of this, there's this need to balance like family, career, personal fulfillment, self-care. How can we begin to start to balance all of those things? Or can we?
I think we can. And I think one of the things that I always like to say, and Kim's heard this time and time again, but if you look at the word menopause, it starts with me, M-E. And we need to recognize that. It's just like, the oxygen mask on the airplane, right? When it drops, we give oxygen to ourselves before we administer it to other people. And especially during this midlife stage, and especially as we navigate the menopause journey, we have to take time for ourselves. We have to look at those holistic modalities that allow us to breathe, to find space, to take care of ourselves so that we can thrive at work, so that we can support our families. And I think, having male allies is really important as well. I think the men in our lives, whether it be in our homes, whether it's our partners, our friends, or in the workplace, I do think that they have a genuine interest in supporting us. They just don't know. And as we build awareness and as the conversations become more normalized, I think that that support from men will also fold into the picture. And again, we're not going to be shy about asking for what we need once we realize what it is we need, right? You don't know what you don't know.
True. Kim, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this actually. And April and I are both life coaches, and I'm also a health coach. And I've really come to terms with the fact that the way we've managed our life before is not going to help us in going forward with menopause. We need to prioritize ourselves and things that we've let go to raise kids or go to work or whatever it is, the things that you need to do. We need to prioritize sleep. We need to prioritize friends and community. We need to prioritize good nutrition, which is a whole nother podcast in and of itself. We need to look at moving our bodies, all of the things that help move and help your body really feel good, you have to prioritize those. And it's hard because we've been raised with almost guilt for that self-care, right? Or whatever that means. And now you have to. We've talked to a lot of women who don't even know what that means or how to put their one foot in front of the other on this topic. So yeah, I think that this is a great time to be a woman as we're talking about it, and we're living longer, and there's acceptance that we have to take care of ourselves. And that is way easier said than done.
Yeah, you are so right. I always tell folks I crashed for 2 solid years, could not drive for a couple of months within that time frame. And if you don't take care of yourself, that's exactly what is going to happen. So it's better to, you know, do that right now. I'm going to circle back to one quick thing that April mentioned when she was talking about the men in our lives. I make it a point to have these conversations with my sons, even when they were younger. I'm like, okay, when you get married, you know, 1 week out of the month, when she's not really mad at you. And so now I'm having this menopause conversation. You're not, no one's there yet, but you know, when you start to see the symptoms, when you start to see the signs, this is how you can step up and help her advocate for her own self, giving her space, or just kind of knowing what's going on and not brushing it off, I think is so important too. So I'm happy you brought up the men as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We need them as our allies, right?
We do. So how does menopause impact women in the workplace? And what are some common challenges that women are now facing? And I'm going to go to the HR person first for this.
Go, Kim.
Well, okay, I'll answer this in two ways. One, I'll tell you some statistics on the workplace, and then I'll give you an example of what happens to women during that time. So 1 in 4 women have considered leaving the workplace during this menopause transition because they can't manage their symptoms in the way that they would want to. And 1 in 10 have left. 14% have gone part-time, and 8% have not applied for that promotion because of the symptoms that they're facing. Those statistics are kind of staggering and expensive when those kinds of things happen to employers in the workplace when women are leaving like that. And so when you look at difficulty sleeping and hot flashes and depression and anxiety, well over 70% of women talk about those physical symptoms that happen. So these symptoms interact with each other. And so let's just take an example of someone who has night sweat, for example, and that means they can't sleep and they wake up feeling fatigued, and then they get to work and they can't concentrate and they have brain fog. And when you have brain fog, you lose your confidence because you feel like you can't have conversations. You can't remember the words. It's crazy. It was one of my major symptoms during menopause. But then it makes them feel anxious. And then the cycle starts all over again the next night that they're anxious that all those things happened. And then that. So I think that employers need to understand that these kinds of things happen. And that if a woman says, I need to come in late sometimes, or I need a fan, or I need a place to breathe, like, it's easy accommodations, but the statistics of what's happening to women, the cost, and we haven't even talked about that, but the cost to employers when those kinds of things happen, and this is what a woman is experiencing, it changes the workplace environment in a way that makes it difficult for people to get work done. So that's what I would say are some of the data and some of the actual things that have happened to people.
I think when we start talking about the dollars, sometimes when you can't get in the door one way, you can get in another. And when you start talking about the bottom line, hopefully if we can't get in one way, we can get in with that conversation and at least get people to listen. I tried to talk to a group and the first response was, oh, it's not impacting us. And then her second excuse was, oh, we don't want the men in the office to hear that. We'll have to continue to figure out how to get in. But the stats that you gave were very impactful. So yeah. So April.
Yeah. I mean, as we're talking about the financial impact, let's just call out the numbers. You know, while we're here, it's estimated $1.8 billion is the cost to organizations. And that's not even factoring in medical expenses. So if you factor that in, you're looking at 26.6. That's a huge number. And so if we aren't sitting up straight and taking a listen because it's the right thing to do, because we don't want to lose that talent pool of women in their 40s and 50s, then take a listen with the financial impact that it's going to have on the organization if you don't. And that is not even taking into consideration the cost to replace employees. You know, Kim mentioned 1 in 10 actually leave the workplace. You know, there's a significant portion of that workforce that's reducing their hours to part-time. There's a financial cost in replacing those employees as well. So there's definitely a business case to be made here. And I'd love to point out here that women that are 50 and older are the fastest growing workplace demographic right now. And 100 years ago, the average lifespan was 59. The average age to reach menopause was 57. So it really was the end of life. That's not the case anymore. If you consider that the average age to reach perimenopause is 41, that's for white women. It's even younger for other ethnic groups. So let's say, you know, late 30s, that's not old. And then we're living well into our 70s and 80s and working until our 60s and 70s. We're in the workforce in some stage of our menopausal journey, a half to a third of our lifetime. So it's critical that organizations pay attention and provide that safe, inclusive environment for employees.
I agree. So what if I'm paying attention as an employer? What do I need to do? What are policies, procedures that I can put in place? How can I make the space safe for the women and the men who work for me?
Kim, I know this is a passion of yours, so jump on in here. I know you're like, yes, let me
ask. Yeah, policy, write this down, people.
Listen, this isn't hard. There's a lot of culture change that's hard, and this is not hard. First, we need to have people start talking about it so that you're not afraid to talk around the male people that you were saying about. Like, let's normalize the conversation. Let's get people understanding what it is and what it isn't. Then we need to educate people to break down some of those misinformation and their myths. Like, you know, people are, all you're doing is hot flashing and bleeding all over the place. Well, that's not it. Let's make sure that managers and employees and HR know what's going on and how an organization can support people. And then we need to create those menopause-friendly environments by providing accommodations. As I mentioned, it's not hard. It's fans. It's a restroom. It's come in late if you need to. It's, okay, you need to leave early today. Like, not that hard and not that expensive, and far less expensive than not doing this work, right? Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is like, put it in writing, have a policy that people all know and live that policy. Don't just say their words. And that is not hard either, because it's really a, we support this. Our culture believes that all people at all phases in their life are important. And there'll be times where we need to help people at various health issues or pregnancy. This is just one more way. And policy alone without action is kind of pointless. So really put in writing and make a plan for how you want it to educate your workforce. Studies show that it does take specific training for people to truly understand. And so that's our whole goal, is to come in and help companies educate, change the culture around how we treat people, and help write policies that can sustain the actions going forward.
To me, this is a diversity, equity, and inclusion issue. Like, totally. Duh. Yeah. I mean, it totally is. Also, I thought about even things like, I don't know, April, you and I had talked about this. So when I worked in the education industry, we did education cafes, and I've heard of menopause cafes as well. So just providing a space, so maybe even after work, where women can come together and connect, just so that they can, you know, have conversation and share things. There are so many different ways that an organization can step up. And just like you said, Medovia can help them, provide them with those policies and those ideas, so that they can step up. And I think a lot of times people think, oh my goodness, it's another issue, or it's going to cost us more money. But again, we've just clearly said not doing it is what is costing the organization,
right?
Not the opposite way. Yeah. So are there industry specific challenges or opportunities? So you're in tech, Is that some, is it harder in tech for, because it may be a little more male heavy or harder in banking? I don't know. I don't want to stereotype an organization anymore, but back in the day.
Yeah, I think that the tech industries are the ones that are wanting to attract and retain employees in this space. And we're starting to see companies add supplemental benefits like menopause support. And that would be, you would have a virtual doctor and support to be able to use as a benefit. And we like to come alongside those and provide educational support to employers. In some of the male-dominated industries, we've had some very interesting conversations with the steel workers. They want to retain women, and they want to increase their women's number of women in their organizations and their industries. And so we're starting to have conversations there. And it seems intimidating to try and convince a male leader that this is an important case for them to take on. But once you talk about the data and the statistics and the retention and all of those things, it's not an easy sell, but it's an easy thing to understand.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, we often hear, "I didn't know." It comes back to you don't know what you don't know. The training and the curriculum and the awareness that we bring to organizations really is like a light bulb going off. Like, I had no idea, and now I do. It's intimidating at first, but I think you'd agree, Kim, the feedback is that this was wonderful. I had no idea. And if you have a male that, or anyone that's sleeping next to someone that's going through menopause and having a hot flash, you know personally how difficult it can be for someone. So I don't want to discount the fact that there are males that are familiar with menopause because they have a partner, they have someone in their lives that is struggling with it, because we know that 25% of those that are experiencing menopause symptoms, it impacts them in a very severe way. If you have a relationship with someone like that, for sure, you're familiar with the severity of it. And I will also say there are industries like the construction industry, steel workers that don't even have honey buckets. Or, let's say construction workers, the flaggers that are out on the street, where do they use the bathroom? Where do they change their tampons and pads? So it's very simple accommodations that we can put into place that allow women to thrive in their careers.
What does 2030 look like? Menopause in business.
2030.
Yeah. I'm giving 6 years to solve this problem, April.
I know, I'm like, oh, I was doing the math, like, 24, 25. Yeah, I'm still counting on my fingers though. 2030. I hope that by 2030 that we're not shifting in our seats when we say the word menopause or menstruation, that this is a normal conversation, that we see a vast majority of organizations that have implemented menopause policies, that they're menopause friendly. No, we're rolling out a menopause-friendly program later on this year where you can get accredited, place a badge on your website, and the world will know that you support anyone going through menopause within your organization. It's a lofty goal, right? The UK is far ahead of us. They have had programs for 7 or 8 years, and they're still working on introducing menopause-friendly environments to more and more organizations. So it's a lofty goal, but I think we can get there. I think that if we can hit the accelerator, that goal can be met. Kim, what do you think?
No, I agree with you. And I think that when we start having those conversations, it's sometimes still an ick topic, right? You could tell people are uncomfortable with it. And companies want to be the leaders, but they don't want to be the first out the gate on this. And I'm with April on the let's make sure that we're all talking about it, that people feel that it's important, and that women know that there are places they can go that's comfortable for them. And that's just an expectation. And the other thing I would add is there is positive things that are happening in Washington, D.C. Dr. Biden has got a committee looking at women's health. There's been very little investment in that, and I'm excited to see what's going to come of that. I also believe that there'll be some workplace policy changes from a legislative perspective that supports women in this space. They've done that in the UK and they're talking about that in Australia. So I hope that by 2030 that those things have gone through. We've increased our budgets for women's health research, that some of these questions and problems have been solved or at least researched. And the stigmas around all previous studies around this that have brought along some false narratives have helped people understand what's really true and what we can do. I'm really excited about that, and that makes me excited every day to be part of that change.
Yeah,
That
there's
was
a
a
lot of
perfect.
research being done right now and a lot of new products that are in the research stage right now to help manage menopause symptoms too. Kim and I were at a conference recently in December, and it was really exciting to hear what's in the pipeline. So I do think by 2030 that we're going to see much more on the market to manage those menopause symptoms, women's health in general, not just menopause, the whole health span for women. I think the landscape is going to change, and it will be different for our daughters, and it will be different for their daughters.
Yeah, I hope so. That was a Kim, I'm happy you mentioned DC because that was actually my next question. I wanted to ask both of you, use this opportunity to give a message to our legislators. What would you say to them as it relates to this situation?
Well, I would just follow up on what I just said, and that is invest more money from the National Institute of Health into women's health overall, but definitely into women's aging. And secondly, I would like legislation to pass that protects women in the workplace around the menopause symptoms that they have so that there's no risk of termination or a demotion because of the symptoms that you're having at the time. I think that it's really important to have that support from the highest levels of the government for us to be able to change the narrative inside companies and cultures.
Yeah. And I think the only other thing that I would add, I'll give you an amen on that. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
I echo that.
I love to hear those.
Absolutely. I'm just nodding my head yes over here. But I think the only other thing that I would add to this is equitable access to health care as well. You know, with when Kim and I have conversations with organizations that are providing specific healthcare for women in this space, one of the common threads and themes that we keep hearing is that it's not affordable. You know, we want an affordable point of entry for everyone so that it's equitable. And right now it's not. I do hope that with that legislation that we take that into consideration as well so that everyone has the same access to care that they need to manage through the menopause.
Two more questions for you. Well, four, but the last two are easy. So, all are easy because you guys are so intelligent and I'm loving this conversation. So thank you again. How do you find inspiration and or motivation in your day-to-day being over 40? Am I allowed to say that? I'm 54. I'll just put mine
I'm 55 and I don't mind saying that. I love being 55.
Kim's rolling her eyes at
I
us. Are you,
do.
Kim?
I mean,
I'm 55. Yeah, I'm
Okay, all
55.
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a better place. You know, you
I'm
know who you
so surprised.
are. You're comfortable in your skin. It's a take it or leave it. Here I am. So I can jump in first, Kim. I used to feel guilty for taking care of myself and dreaming, right? Having a dream and inspiration, but it's centering myself and taking time for me. It comes back to the me. Right. Every single day, I get up early before the rest of the world, before the rest of my house gets up, and I take the time to journal. For me personally, I take the time to pray, and it's my spirituality that gives me that inspiration on a daily basis, and also the quiet time, you know, allowing space to breathe, to think, to dream, and to pray. You know? It's
Love
and I surround myself with like people, you know, like Kim. I mean, Kim, myself, Emily, we chose to work together not just because of our skill set, but because we celebrate together, we win together, we empower each other. It's a beautiful place. So choice is important as well. Kim, jump on in.
Well, April wakes up way before me and has done half a day's work because I don't sleep at night. So I allow myself to not have to wake up early. I meditate every day. And what has been so amazing about this journey for me is I finally have done things that have been on my bucket list forever, but I was raising kids and I had a commute and, all of those things. And starting this work and feeling called to use my skills and knowledge to help women in this space has probably been the most fun and energetic thing that I've done in years and years for myself, right? We are starting this business, and like April said, it's about a year old, and I can't believe where I can just say, hey, this is what I want to do, and April and Emily are like, okay, let's go do that. And it's been a really fun way to keep a mind going, come up with new ideas, be creative, use the skills that I've spent my working life sort of working through, and giving an example to my children about this is you can reinvent yourself when you want to. And they know that I'm sort of famous on this team for trying everything so that I can comment on it or give feedback to it. I have a continuous glucose monitor right now so that I can tell people about whether it's good or bad. I've tried all the skincare, I've tried all the makeup. And so I just take care of myself that way, and it's fun.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It is a new day. And I was up to like almost midnight last night. I was working on a project. I was really excited. I'm launching a challenge in March, and midnight, I'm all this energy. I'm like, I'm doing this for myself, not for a corporation. Isn't this, that was like the first thing that came to my mind. And the reinvention, I think, is amazing. A lot of women walk into, not a lot, some women may walk into this period of life and think, oh, it's over, I can't have kids anymore, or which I don't know why they are not shouting hallelujah, some people. But they walk into it, feeling sad or like it's over, it's the end. We are living testimonies. All of the women that I interview are living testimonies that this is not the end. This is just the beginning. It's about what you make this part of your life. So, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Finding your purpose is what is your purpose in the second half of your life? Makes this time so exciting because you don't care what other people think. And I feel so lucky that my purpose aligns with two other amazing women who make me better every single day. And I also have an amazing support group of friends who will, go to the mat with me. And those things have always been kept me centered and grateful.
Kim, at the beginning, you answered this question, or kind of, you talked about what the legacy you wanted to leave in this whole process. April, tell us what legacy or message of hope do you want to leave with the audience?
Wow, I have so much to say on that, Stephanie. How do I tighten that up, my answer? I've been working in the menstrual, sexual, reproductive health space for 10 years. And I still today, being in the menopause space, pinch myself when I get up. Like Kim mentioned, like I get to do this work. I get to work with other women. I get to elevate them. And I really, really want other women to have that same thing. I want them to not feel like they're dragging their feet out of bed and they have to get up and they have to go do fill in the blank, that they can really use this latter part of their life to dream and to live out their dreams and to speak up and use the voice. My daughter has a very quiet voice. She's very confident, but she's very quiet. And growing up, I would say, use your lion voice because your voice matters. And so I think that would be my closing statement, is just say, use your voice. Whether it's menopause, whether it's menopause in the workplace or something else, use your voice because we need to hear from you. You're important and you matter. And we need your voice.
I agree with that. I agree. For both of you all, what are you reading or listening to right now?
Oh my gosh. I have like 10 books sitting by my bedside.
Everyone says that, and I do too. Like, I was going through Audible. I'm like, oh man, three quarters of a way, half the way.
Yeah, well, First of all, I listen to your podcast. So I walk my dog
Very
every
much.
morning. I listen to your podcast. I'm not just saying that. I listen to your podcast, and that my feed is filled with menopause, you know, everything menopause. I kind of marinate on that and soak that in every day. You know, as far as books, I just ordered a new one, and this seems kind of funny, but I think it's called Bad Leadership or something like that. I think it'll be interesting to read that because we have a tendency to look at, we see the negative before we see the positive. And I read a lot of books on how to, and this is how you can do things well. I think it'll be interesting to just read something in the reverse and see if I find a little nugget in there. So yeah, it's something different. Yeah.
Love that.
I just finished Glowworthy by Katie Silcox. And Katie runs a Ayurveda school that I just completed. And this book is all about how to find your center, your space, your glow, how do you listen to your intuition. And I'm listening to, or re-listening to, I should say, Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I was listening to her podcast with Elizabeth Gilbert, and she talked a lot about the messages in your brain and why do we believe the bad stuff we're telling ourselves and we don't believe the good stuff that we're telling ourselves, and how do we listen more for the good things and push out the bad things. And I'm like, I got to go back to that book again because I'm a different person from the first time I read it during COVID, and I have a different focus and a different way of being. And I just started that again in my head when I'm on my walks. April and I live in the same neighborhood, and she walks early in the morning and I walk late in the afternoon. And we both always are like, oh my gosh, I just thought about this. And every time when we're on our walk, we have this like ideas that come up. And so that's exciting too.
Yeah.
I love that you just said that the shower and a good walk run your entire business or get all types of great ideas during those activities.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
First of all, once again, thank you both for being here. I love when I learn something new. I learn when I'm able to gather some new information for the audience as well. So if you guys can tell us how we can find you, that would be great.
Sure, I'll dive in. You can find us at info@midovia.com. MIDOVIA is the best way. You can look us up at midovia.com, or you can find us on LinkedIn at midovia.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Thank you both so much for being here once again. Everyone, thank you for listening to Hello Hot Flash, where we help you control the midlife change. Make sure to check out the show notes, where we will include links to all of the subjects that we covered today. Everyone, here's to your health. Did you know that you can be a guest on Hello Hot Flash? Well, you can, and I'm inviting you to have a lifestyle conversation with me. During our 30-minute chat, we'll come up with a strategy that will help you reach your health and wellness goals, and it's completely free. Check out episode 119 to hear an example of a lifestyle conversation, and then head over to hellohotflash.com, scroll down, and click on free resources. You'll see a link to schedule your lifestyle conversation. Spaces are limited. I can't wait to have a lifestyle conversation with you. Here's to your health.